pertinent, and she regretted the question the second it came out. But Nehemia just clicked her tongue. That pretty boy. He grinned at me far too much, and you should only see how he winked at the other women in the court. I want a husband to warm my bed, and my bed alone. She glanced sidelong at the assassin, giving her another head-to-toe examination. Selena caught the princess's eyes lingering on the few scars on her hands. Where are you from, Lillian? Selena casually hid her hands in the folds of her gown. Belhaven, a city in Fenharrow. It's a fishing port, smells terrible. That wasn't a lie. Every time she'd visited Belhaven for a mission, the reek of fish made her gag if she got too near the docks. The princess chuckled. Rifthold smells terrible. Too many people. At least in Benjali, the sun burns up everything. And my father's river palace smells like lotus blossoms. Kaol cleared his throat beside them, obviously tired of being excluded from the conversation. And Selena grinned at him. Don't be so glum, she said in the common tongue. We must cater to the princess.
Stop your gloating, he said, his brows low.
He put a hand on the hilt of his sword, and Nehemia's guard stepped closer to him. Though Kaol might be captain of the guard, Selena didn't doubt for a moment that Nehemia's guards would put him down if he became a threat.
We're only bringing her back to the king's council.
I'm going to have a word with them about allowing Cal Tane to show her around.
Do you hunt? Nehemia interrupted in Eelway. Me? The princess nodded. No, Selena said, then switched back to Eelway. I'm more of a reader.
Nehemia looked toward a rain-splattered window. Most of our books were burned 5 years ago, when Otterlin marched in.
It didn't make a difference if the books were about magic. Her voice quieted at the word, even though Kaol and the councilmen couldn't understand them, or history. They just burned the libraries whole, along with the museums and universities.
A familiar ache filled her chest. Selena nodded.
Eelway wasn't the only country where that happened.
Something cold and bitter glittered in Nehemia's eyes. Now most of the books we receive are from Otterlin.
Books in a language I can barely understand. That's also what I must learn while I'm here. There are so many things.
She stomped her foot, her jewelry clinking.
And I hate these shoes and this miserable dress. I don't care if it's Eelway silk and I'm supposed to be representing my kingdom. The material's been itching me ever since I put it on.
She stared at Selena's elaborate gown.
How can you stand wearing that enormous thing?
Selena picked at the skirts of her dress. It breaks my ribs, to be honest.
Well, at least I'm not the only one suffering, Nehemia said.
Kaol stopped before a door and informed the 6 sentries posted outside to watch the women and the princess's guards.
What's he doing?
Returning you to the council and ensuring that Cal Tane doesn't lead you around again. Nehemia's shoulders slumped slightly.
I've only been here for a day and I wish to leave.
She let out a long sigh through her nose and again turned to the window, as if she could see all the way back to Eelway. Suddenly, she grabbed Selena's hand and squeezed it. Her fingers were surprisingly calloused, in all the spots where the hilt of a sword or dagger might rest. Selena's eyes met with those of the princess, and she dropped her hand.
Perhaps the rumors were correct about her association with the rebels in Eelway.
Will you keep me company while I'm here, Lady Lillian?
Selena blinked at the request, feeling, despite herself, honored.
Of course. When I'm available, I'll gladly attend you.
I have attendants. I wish for someone to talk to.
Selena couldn't help it. She beamed. Kaol entered into the hallway once more and bowed to the princess.
The council would like to see you, Selena translated.
Nehemia let out a low groan, but thanked Kaol before turning to Selena.
I'm glad we met, Lady Lillian,
Nehemia said, her eyes bright.
Peace be with you.
And with you,
the assassin murmured, watching her leave.
She never had many friends, and the ones she had often disappointed her.
Sometimes with devastating consequences,
as she learned that summer with the silent assassins of the Red Desert. After that, she'd sworn never to trust girls again, especially girls with agendas and power of their own, girls who would do anything to get what they wanted. But as the door closed behind the ivory train of the Ilway Princess, Selena wondered if she'd been wrong.
Kaol Westfall watched the assassin eat lunch, her eyes darting from one plate to the next. She had immediately stripped from her gown upon entering her rooms, and now sat in a rose and jade dressing robe that suited her well.
"You're awfully quiet today," she said, her mouth full of food. Would she never stop eating? She ate more than anyone he knew, including his guards. She had multiple helpings of every course at each meal.
"Enthralled by the Princess Nehemia?"
The words were barely distinguishable from her chewing.
"That headstrong girl?"
He immediately regretted the remark as her eyes narrowed. A lecture was coming on, and he was in no mood to be patronized. He had more important things on his mind. Before departing this morning, the king hadn't taken any of the guards he'd suggested he bring on his journey, and refused to say where he was going, or to accept his offer of accompaniment. Not to mention the fact that a few of the royal hounds had gone missing, only to have their half-eaten remains found in the northern wing of the palace. That was worrisome. Who would do such a gruesome thing?
"And what's wrong with headstrong girls?" she pressed. "Other than the fact that they're not wooden-headed ninnies who can only open their mouths to give orders and gossip."
"I just prefer a certain type of woman."
Thankfully, it was the right thing to say, because she batted her eyelashes.
"And what type of woman is that?"
"Not an arrogant assassin."
She pouted.
"Suppose I wasn't an assassin. Would you fancy me then?"
"No."
"Would you prefer Lady Caltaine?"
"Don't be a fool."
It was easy to be mean, but it was also getting far too easy to be nice. He took a bite of bread. She watched him, her head angled. He sometimes felt that she looked at him the way a cat regards a mouse. He just wondered how long it would take for her to pounce. She shrugged and took a bite from an apple. There was something girlish about her, too. Oh, he couldn't stand her contradictions.
"You're staring, Captain."
He almost apologized, but stopped. She was a haughty, vulgar, utterly impertinent assassin. He wished for the months to fly by, for her to be appointed champion, and then, once her years of servitude were over, to be gone. He hadn't slept well since they'd taken her out of Endovier.
"You have food in your teeth," he said.
She picked it out with a sharp nail and turned her head to the window. The rain slid down the glass. Was she looking at the rain or something beyond? He sipped from his goblet. Despite her arrogance, she was clever and relatively kind, and somewhat charming. But where was that writhing darkness? Why didn't it show itself so he could just throw her into the dungeon and call off this ridiculous competition? There was something great and deadly concealed within her, and he didn't like it. He'd be ready. When the time came, he'd be waiting. He just wondered which one of them would survive.
Chapter 14. For the next 4 days, Selena awoke before dawn to train in her room, using whatever she could to exercise. Chairs, the doorway, even her billiards table and cue sticks. The balls made for remarkable balance tools. Around dawn, Kaol usually showed up for breakfast. Afterward, they ran through the game park, where he kept pace at her side. Autumn had fully come, and the wind smelled of crisp leaves and snow. Kaol never said anything when she doubled over, hands on her knees, and vomited up her breakfast. Nor did he comment on the fact that she could go farther and farther each day without stopping for breath. Once they'd finished their run, they trained in a private room far from her competitors' eyes. Until, that is, she collapsed to the ground and cried that she was about to die of hunger and fatigue. At lessons, the knives remained Selena's favorite, but the wooden staff became dear. Naturally, it had to do with the fact that she could freely whack him and not chop off an arm. Since her initial meeting with Princess Nehemia, she hadn't seen or heard from the princess,
not even chatter from the servants. Kaol always came for lunch, and afterward she joined the other champions for a few more hours of training under Brullo's watchful eye. Most of their training was just to make sure they could actually use weapons. And, of course, she kept her head down throughout it all, doing enough to keep Brullo from critiquing her, but not enough to make him praise her the way he did Kane. Kane! How she loathed him! Brullo practically worshipped the man, and even the other champions nodded their respect when he passed by. No one bothered to comment on how perfect her form was. Was this how the other assassins at the Assassin's Keep had felt? All those years she had spent hogging Arabin Hommel's attention? But here, it was hard to focus when Kane was nearby, taunting and sneering, waiting for her to make one mistake. Hopefully he wouldn't distract her at the first elimination test. Brullo hadn't given them any indication what they might be tested for, and Kaol was just as clueless. The day before the first test, she knew something was wrong long before she got to the training hall. Kaol hadn't shown up for breakfast, but rather sent her guards to bring her to the training hall to practice on her own. He didn't show up for lunch, either, and by the time she was escorted to the hall, she was brimming with questions. Without Kaol to stand near, she lingered beside a pillar, watching the competitors file in, flanked by guards and their trainers. Brullo wasn't there yet. Another oddity. And there were far too many guards in the training hall today.
What do you suppose this is about?
Knox Owen, the young thief from Perinth, asked from beside her. After proving himself somewhat skilled during practice, many of the other competitors had sought him out, but he still opted to keep to himself. Captain Westfall didn't train me this morning, she offered.
What was the harm in admitting that?
Knox held out his hand.
Knox Owen.
I know who you are, she said, but shook his hand anyway. His grip was solid, his hand calloused and scarred. He'd seen his fair share of action.
Good. I felt a bit invisible with that hulking lout showing off these past few days.
He jerked his chin toward Kane, who was in the middle of examining his bulging biceps. A large ring of black iridescent stone glimmered on Kane's finger. Strange that he'd wear it to practice. Knox went on.
Did you see Varen? He looks like he's going to be sick.
He pointed to the loud-mouthed thief that Selena wanted to knock out cold. Normally, Varen could be found near Kane, taunting the other champions. But today he stood alone by the window, face pale and eyes wide. I heard him talking to Kane, said a timid voice behind them, and they found Paylor, the youngest assassin, standing nearby. She'd spent half a day watching Paylor, and while she only pretended to be mediocre, he truly could use the training. Assassin indeed. His voice hasn't even deepened yet. How did he wind up here?
What'd he say?
Knox put his hands in his pockets. His clothes weren't as ratty as the other competitors. The mere fact that she'd actually heard his name implied he must have been a good thief in Perinth. Paylor's freckled face paled a bit. Bill Chastain, the Eye Eater, was found stone-cold dead this morning.
A champion was dead?
And a notorious killer at that. How? She demanded. Paylor swallowed hard. Varen said it wasn't pretty, like someone ripped him wide open. He passed the body on his way here.
Knox cursed under his breath, and Selena studied the other champions.
A hush had fallen on the group, and clusters of them stood together, whispering.
Varen's story was spreading fast.
Paylor went on. He said Chastain's body was in ribbons. A chill snaked down her spine, but she shook her head, just as a guard entered and told them that Brullo had ordered them to have free rein of the training hall today and to practice what they wanted. Needing to distract herself from the image forming in her mind, she didn't bother to say goodbye to Knox and Paylor as she strode to the weapons rack and gathered a belt strapped with throwing knives. She took up a place near the archery targets. Knox joined her a moment later and started firing his knives at the target. He hit the second ring, but never got any closer to the center. His skill with knives wasn't nearly as good as his archery. She drew a dagger from the belt. Who would have killed one of the champions so brutally? And how had they gotten away with it, if the body was in the hall? This castle was swarming with guards. A champion was dead, and just a day before their first test. Would this start a pattern? Her focus narrowed to the small black dot in the center of the target. She steadied her breathing as she cocked her arm, letting her wrist go loose. The sounds of the other champions faded. The blackness of the bullseye beckoned, and as she exhaled, she sent the dagger flying. It sparkled, a shooting star of steel. She smiled grimly as it struck home. Beside her, Nox swore colorfully when his dagger hit the third ring on his target, and her smile broadened, despite the shredded corpse that lay somewhere in the castle. Selena drew another dagger, but paused as Varin called to her from the ring where he sparred with Cain.
Circus tricks ain't much use when you're the king's champion.
She shifted her gaze to him, but kept positioned toward the target.
You'd be better off on your back, learning tricks useful to a woman. In fact, I can teach you some tonight if you'd like.
He laughed, and Cain joined with him. Selena gripped the hilt of a dagger so hard that it hurt.
Don't listen to them, Nox murmured.
He tossed another dagger, missing the bullseye again.
They wouldn't know the first thing to do with a woman, even if one walked stark naked into their bedroom.
Selena threw her dagger, and the blade clanged as it landed a hair's breadth from the one she'd already embedded in the bullseye. Nox's dark brows rose, accentuating his gray eyes. He couldn't have been older than 25.
You've got impressive aim.
For a girl? She challenged.
No, he said, and threw another dagger. For anyone.
The dagger yet again missed the mark. He stalked to the target, yanking out all six daggers and shoving them in their sheaths before returning to the throwing line. Selena cleared her throat.
You're standing wrong, she said,
quietly enough so the other champions couldn't hear.
And you're holding your wrist incorrectly.
Nox lowered his arm. She took up her stance.
Legs like this, she said.
He studied her for a moment, then positioned his legs similarly.
Bend slightly at the knees, shoulders back. Loosen your wrist. Throw when you exhale.
She demonstrated for him, and her dagger found its mark.
Show me again, Nox said appreciatively.
She did so, and struck the target. Then she threw with her left hand, and fought her whoop of triumph as the blade sank into the handle of another dagger. Nox focused on the target as he brought up his arm.
Well, you've just put me to shame, he said, laughing under his breath as he lifted his dagger higher.
Keep your wrist even looser, was her reply.
It's all about how you snap it. Nox obeyed, and as he exhaled a long breath, his dagger flew. It didn't hit the bullseye, but it came within the inner circle. His brows rose.
That's a bit of an improvement.
Just a bit, she said, and held her ground as he gathered their knives from the two targets and handed hers back. She sheathed them in her belt.
You're from Perinth, right? She asked.
Though she'd never been to Perinth, Terrasen's second-largest city, the mention of her homeland still spiked a bolt of fear and guilt. It had been 10 years since the royal family had been butchered, 10 years since the King of Otterlin had marched his army in, 10 years since Terrasen met its doom with bowed heads and silence. She shouldn't have mentioned it. She didn't know why she mentioned it, actually. She schooled her features into polite interest as Nox nodded.
This is my first time out of Perinth, actually.
You said you were from Belhaven, didn't you?
My father is a merchant, she lied.
And what does he think about a daughter who steals jewels for a living?
She conceded a smile and hurled a knife into the target. He won't be inviting me home for a while, that's for certain.
Ah, you're in good hands, though. You've got the best trainer out of anyone. I've seen you two running at dawn. I have to beg mine to put down the bottle and let me train outside of lessons.
He inclined his head toward his trainer, who sat against the wall, the hood of his cape over his eyes.
Sleeping. Yet again.
The captain of the guard is a pain in my ass at times, she said, chucking another knife. But you're right. He's the best.
Nox was quiet for a moment before he said,
The next time we pair off for lessons, find me, will you? Why?
She reached for another dagger, but found she'd depleted her stock again. Nox threw another dagger, and it hit the bullseye this time.
Because my gold's on you winning this whole damn thing.
She smiled a little. Let's hope you won't be eliminated at the test tomorrow. She scanned the training hall for any sign of the challenge to come the following morning, but found nothing out of the ordinary. The other competitors remained mostly quiet, save for Cain and Varen, and many of them were pale as snow.
And let's hope neither of us winds up like the Eye Eater, she added, and meant it.
Don't you ever do anything other than read, said Kaol.
She started from her chair on the balcony as he took a seat beside her. The late afternoon sunlight warmed her face, and the last balmy breeze of autumn rushed through her unbound hair. She stuck out her tongue. Shouldn't you be looking into the Eye Eater's murder? He never came to her rooms after lunch.
Something dark flitted across his eyes.
That's none of your business. And don't try to pry details from me about it, he added as she opened her mouth.
He pointed to the book in her lap.
I saw at lunch that you're reading The Wind and the Rain, and I forgot to ask what you thought.
He'd really come to talk about a book when a champion's corpse had been found that morning? It's a bit dense, she admitted, holding up the brown volume in her lap. When he didn't reply, she asked, Why are you really here?
I had a long day.
She massaged an ache in her knee. Because of Bill's murder?
Because the prince dragged me into a council meeting that lasted for 3 hours, he said, a muscle in his jaw feathering.
I thought His Royal Highness was your friend.
He is.
How long have you been friends? He paused, and she knew he was contemplating how she might use the information against him, weighing the risk of telling her the truth. She was about to snap at him when he said,
Since we were young. We were the only boys of our age in the castle, at least of high rank. We had lessons together, played together, trained together. But when I was 13, my father moved my family back to our home in Aniel.
The city on the Silver Lake? It somehow made sense that Kaol's family ruled Aniel. The citizens of Aniel were warriors from birth and had been guardians against the hordes of the wild men from the White Fang Mountains for generations. Thankfully, things had gotten a little easier for the warriors of Aniel in the past 10 years. The White Fang Mountain men had been one of the first peoples to be put down by Otterland's conquering armies, and very rarely did their rebels make it to slavery. She'd heard tales of mountain men killing their wives and children, then themselves, rather than be taken by Otterlin. The thought of Kaol going up against hundreds of them, against men built like Cain, made her a little sick.
Yes, Kaol said, fiddling with the long hunting knife at his side. I was slotted to join the royal council, like my father. He wanted me to spend some time among my own people, and learn whatever it is councilmen learn. He said that with the king's army now in the mountains, we could move our interests from fighting the mountain folk to politics.
His golden eyes were distant,
but I missed Rifthold.
So you ran away? She marveled that he was volunteering this much. Hadn't he refused to tell her almost anything about himself while traveling from Endovir?
Ran away?
Kaol chuckled.
No. Dorian convinced the captain of the guard to take me as his apprentice, with the help of Brello. My father refused, so I abdicated my title as Lord of Aniel to my brother and left the next day.
The captain's silence suggested what he could not say, that his father hadn't objected. What of his mother? He loosed a long breath.
What about you, then?
She crossed her arms. I thought you didn't want to know anything about me. There was a ghost of a smile on his face as he watched the sky melt into a smear of tangerine.
What do your parents make of their daughter being Otterland's assassin?
My parents are dead, she said. They died when I was 8.
So you...
Her heart thundered in her chest. I was born in Terrasen, then I became an assassin, then I went to Endovir, and now I'm here. And that's it. Silence fell. Then he asked,
Where'd you get that scar on your right hand?
She didn't need to glance at the jagged line that ran along the top of her hand, just above her wrist. She flexed her fingers. When I was 12, Aerobin Hommel decided I wasn't nearly as skilled at swordplay with my left hand, so he gave me a choice. Either he could break my right hand or I could do it myself. The phantom memory of the blinding pain lanced through her hand. That night, I put my hand against a doorframe and slammed the door shut on it. I split my hand wide open and broke two bones. It took months to heal. Months during which I could only use my left hand. She gave him a vicious smile. I bet Brillo never did that to you.
No,
he said quietly.
No, he didn't.
He cleared his throat and stood. The first test is tomorrow.
Are you ready?
Of course, she lied. He remained standing there for a moment longer, studying her.
I'll see you tomorrow morning,
he said, and left. In the silence that followed in his wake, she contemplated his story, the paths that had made them so different, but so similar. She wrapped her arms around herself, a cold wind picking up the skirts of her dress and blowing them behind her. Chapter 15. Though she'd never admit it, Selena didn't really know what to expect at their first test. With all the training over the past 5 days and fiddling with various weapons and techniques, her body ached. Which was another thing she'd never admit, even though hiding the throbbing pain in her limbs was nearly impossible. As Selena and Kaol entered the giant sparring room in the morning, she glanced at her competitors and remembered she wasn't the only one who hadn't a clue what to expect. A towering black curtain had been swept across half of the room, blocking the other half from sight. Whatever lay beyond that curtain, she realized, was to decide the fate of one of them. The normal ruckus had been replaced by a rustling quiet, and rather than mill about, the competitors lingered by their trainer's sides. She kept close to Kaol, which wasn't a change from the ordinary. But the sponsors atop the mezzanine looking over the black-and-white checkered floor were. Her throat tightened as her gaze met with that of the Crown Prince. Aside from sending her his books, she hadn't seen or heard from him since the meeting with the king. He flashed her a grin, those sapphire eyes gleaming in the morning light. She offered him a tight smile in return and quickly looked away. Brillo stood by the curtain, a scarred hand upon his sword, and Selena studied the scene. Someone stepped to her side. She knew who it was before he spoke. It's a bit dramatic, don't you think? She glanced sidelong at Knox. Kaol tensed next to her, and she could feel him watching the thief closely, no doubt wondering if she and Knox were formulating some escape plan that would include the deaths of every member of the royal family.
After 5 days of mindless training,
she replied quietly, all too aware that very few people were speaking in the hall.
I'm glad for a bit of excitement.
Knox laughed under his breath.
What do you think it is?
She shrugged, keeping her attention on the curtain. More and more competitors were arriving, and soon the clock would strike 9, the time when the test would begin. Even if she knew what was behind the curtain, she certainly wouldn't help him.
Hopefully it's a pack of man-eating wolves that we have to take on with our bare hands.
She looked at him fully now, a half-smile on her lips. Wouldn't that be fun? Kaol subtly cleared his throat. Now was not the time for talking. She stuffed her hands into the pockets of her black pants.
Best of luck,
she said to Knox before she strode toward the curtain, Kaol following her. When they were far enough away, she asked under her breath,
No idea what's behind that curtain?
Kaol shook his head. She adjusted the thick leather belt slung low across her hips. It was the kind of belt intended to bear the weight of multiple weapons. Its lightness now only reminded her of what she'd lost and what she had to gain. The death of the Eye Eater yesterday had been fortunate in one aspect. One less man to compete with. She glanced up at Dorian. He could probably see what was behind the curtain from his place on the mezzanine.
Why not help her cheat a little?
She flicked her attention to the other sponsors, noblemen in fine clothing, and ground her teeth at the sight of Parrington. He smirked as he watched Kane, who was stretching out his muscular arms. Had he already told Kane what was beyond the curtain? Brello cleared his throat.
"Attention now," he called to them.
All of the competitors tried to look calm as he strode to the center of the curtain.
"Your first test has arrived."
He grinned broadly, as if whatever the curtain concealed was going to torment the hell out of them.
"As His Majesty has ordered, one of you will be eliminated today. One of you will be deemed unworthy."
Just get on with it, she thought, her jaw clenched tight. As if he'd read her thoughts, Brello snapped his fingers, and a guard standing by the wall pulled the curtain back. Inch by inch, it swayed until... Selena bit down her laugh.
Archery? It was an archery contest? Rules are simple, Brello said.
Behind him, five targets were staggered at various distances throughout the hall.
You get five shots, one per target. The one with the worst aim goes home.
Some competitors began murmuring, but it was all she could do to keep from beaming. Unfortunately, Kane didn't bother to hide his triumphant grin. Why couldn't he have been the champion who was found dead?
You'll go one at a time, Brello said,
and behind them a pair of soldiers rolled out a card of bows and quivers loaded with arrows.
Form a line at the table to determine your order. The test begins now.
She expected them to rush to the long table stacked with identical bows and arrows, but apparently none of the 21 other competitors were in much of a hurry to go home. Selena made to join the forming line, but Kaol grasped her shoulder.
Don't show off, he warned.
She smiled sweetly and pried his fingers off her.
I'll try not to, she purred, and joined the line.
It was an enormous leap of faith to give them arrows, even if the tips were blunted. A dull head wouldn't stop it from going through Parrington's throat, or Dorian's, if she wanted. Though the thought was entertaining, she kept her attention on the competitors. With 22 champions and 5 shots each, the test took a dreadfully long time. Thanks to Kaol pulling her aside, she'd been in the back of the line. Not dead last, but 3 from the end. Far enough back that she had to watch everyone else go before her, including Kane. The other competitors did well enough. The giant circular targets were composed of 5 colored rings, yellow marking the center, with only a tiny black dot to mark the bullseye. Each target got smaller the further back it was placed, and because the room was so long, the final target was nearly 70 yards away. Selena ran her fingers along the smooth curve of her yew bow. Archery was one of the first skills Arobin had taught her, a staple of any assassin's training. 2 of the assassins further proved it with easy, skilled shots, though they didn't hit the bullseyes, and their shots got sloppier the farther the target. Whoever their masters had been, they'd known what they were teaching. Paylor, the gangly assassin, wasn't yet strong enough to manage a longbow, and barely made any shots. When he finished, his eyes gleaming with resentment, the champion sniggered, and Kane laughed the loudest. Brello's face was grim.
Didn't anyone ever teach you how to use a bow, boy?
Paylor lifted his head, glaring at the weapons master with surprising brazenness.
I'm more skilled in poisons.
Poisons?
Brello threw his hands up.
The king wants a champion, and you couldn't shoot a cow in a pasture.
The weapons master waved Paylor off. The other champions laughed again, and Selena wanted nothing more than to smile with them. But Paylor took a shuddering breath, his shoulders relaxing, and joined the other finished competitors. If he wound up being eliminated, where would they bring him? To prison? Or some other hellhole? Despite herself, Selena felt badly for the boy. His shots hadn't been that bad. It was Nox, actually, who surprised her most, with 3 bullseyes into the nearer targets and the 2 final shots along the border of the inner ring. Perhaps she should consider him for an ally. From the way the other competitors watched him as he strode to the back of the room, she knew they were thinking the same thing.
Grave, the repulsive assassin, did fine, she supposed.
4 bullseyes and the final shot right on the border of the innermost ring. But then Kane stepped up to the white line painted at the back of the room, drew back his yew bow, his black ring glinting, and fired. again and again and again within the span of a few seconds. And when the sound of his final shot stopped echoing in the suddenly silent chamber, Selena's stomach turned over. 5 bullseyes. Her one consolation was that none of them had been on that black dot, the absolute center. 1 had come close, though. For some reason, the line started moving quickly. All she could think about was Kane. Kane getting applauded by Parrington. Kane getting slapped on the back by Brullo. Kane getting all of that praise and attention, not because he was a mountain of muscle, but because he actually deserved it. Suddenly, Selena found herself standing at the white line, looking at the vast length of the room before her. Some of the men chuckled, albeit quietly, and she kept her head held high as she reached over her shoulder for an arrow and knocked it into her bow. They'd done some archery practice a few days earlier, and she'd been excellent, or as excellent as she could be without attracting attention. And she'd killed men from longer shots than the farthest target. Clean shots, too. Right through the throat. She tried to swallow, but her mouth was dry.
I am Selena Sardothian, Otterlin's assassin. If these men knew who I was, they'd stop laughing. I am Selena Sardothian. I am going to win. I will not be afraid.
She pulled back her bow, the sore muscles in her arm aching with the effort. She shut out noise, shut out movement, shut out anything other than the sound of her breathing as her focus narrowed on the first target. She took a steady breath. As she exhaled, she let the arrow fly. Bullseye. The tightness in her stomach abated, and she sighed through her nose. It wasn't an absolute bullseye, but she hadn't been aiming for it anyway. Some men stopped laughing, but she paid them no heed as she knocked another arrow and fired at the second target. She aimed for the edge of the innermost ring, which she hit with deadly precision. She could have made an entire circle of arrows, if she'd wanted, and if she'd had enough ammunition. She got another bullseye on the third target, aiming for the edge but landing within the border. She did the same for the fourth target, but aimed for the opposite side of the bullseye. Where she aimed, the arrow met its mark. As she reached for her last arrow, she heard one of the competitors, a red-haired mercenary named Renault, snigger. She clenched her bow tightly enough for the wood to groan and pulled back her final shot. The target was little more than a blur of color, so far back that its bullseye was a grain of sand in the vastness of the room. She couldn't see the little dot in its center, the dot that no one had yet to touch, even Kane. Selena's arm trembled with effort as she pulled the string back a bit farther and fired. The arrow hit the absolute center, obliterating the black dot. They stopped laughing. No one said anything to her when she stalked away from the line and tossed her bow back onto the cart. Kaol only scowled at her. Obviously, she hadn't been that inconspicuous, but Dorian smiled. She sighed and joined the competitors waiting for the competition to finish, keeping well away from all of them. When their marks were compared by Brullo himself, one of the army soldiers, not young Paylor, wound up being eliminated. But though she hadn't lost by any means, Selena couldn't stand, absolutely could not stand, the feeling that she hadn't really won anything at all. Chapter 16. Despite her attempt to keep her breathing steady, Selena gasped for air as she ran beside Kaol in the game park. If he was winded, he didn't show it, other than the gleam of sweat on his face and the dampness of his white shirt. They ran toward a hill, its top still shrouded in morning mist. Her legs buckled at the sight of the incline, and her stomach rose in her throat. Selena let out a loud gasp to get Kaol's attention before she slowed to a stop and braced her hands against a tree trunk. She took a shuddering breath, holding on tightly to the tree as she vomited. She hated the warmth of the tears that leaked from her eyes, but couldn't wipe them away as she heaved again, gagging. Kaol stood nearby, just watching. She leaned her brow into her upper arm, calming her breathing, willing her body to ease. It had been 3 days since the first test, 10 since her arrival in Rifthold, and she was still horribly out of shape. The next elimination was in 4 days, and though training had resumed as usual, she had started waking up a little earlier than normal. She would not lose to Kane, or Renault, or any of them.
"Done?"
Kael asked. She lifted her head to give him a withering glare, but everything spun, dragging her down with it, and she retched again.
"I told you not to eat before we left."
"Are you done being smug?"
"Are you done vomiting your guts up?"
"For the time being," she snapped. "Perhaps I won't be so courteous next time and I'll just vomit all over you instead."
"If you can catch me," he said with a half smile.
She wanted to punch the smirk off his face, but as she took a step, her knees shook, and she put her hands against the tree again, waiting for the retching to renew.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw him looking at her back, most of which was exposed by her damp white undershirt. She stood.
"Are you enjoying looking at my scars?"
He sucked on his lower lip for a moment.
"When did you get those?"
She knew he meant the three enormous lines that ran down her back.
"When do you think?" she said.
He didn't reply, and she looked up at the canopy of leaves above them. A morning breeze sent them all shuddering, ripping a few from where they clung to the skeletal branches. "Those three I received my first day in Endovir."
"What did you do to deserve it?"
"Deserve it?" She laughed sharply. "No one deserves to be whipped like an animal."
He opened his mouth, but she cut him off.
"I arrived in Endovir, and they dragged me into the center of the camp and tied me between the whipping posts. 21 lashes.
She stared at him without entirely seeing him as the ash-gray sky turned into the bleakness of Endovir, and the hiss of the wind became the sighing of slaves.
"That was before I had befriended any of the other slaves, and I spent that first night wondering if I would make it until morning, if my back would become infected, or if I would bleed out and die before I knew what was happening."
"No one helped you?"
"Only in the morning. A young woman slipped me a tin of salve while we were waiting in line for breakfast. I never got to thank her. Later that day, 4 overseers raped and killed her." She clenched her hands into her fists as her eyes stung. "The day I snapped, I stopped by their section of the mines to repay them for what they did to her." Something frozen rushed through her veins.
"They died too quickly."
"But you were a woman in Endovir,"
Kael said, his voice rough and quiet.
"No one ever..."
He trailed off, unable to form the word. She gave him a slow, bitter smile.
"They were afraid of me to begin with.
And after the day I almost touched the wall, none of them dared to come too close to me. But if one guard tried to get too friendly, well, he'd become the example that reminded the others I could easily snap again if I felt like it."
The wind stirred around them, ripping strands of hair from her braid. She didn't need to voice her other suspicion, that perhaps somehow Aerobin had bribed the guards in Endovir for her safety.
"We each survive in our own way."
Selena didn't quite understand the softness in the look he gave her as he nodded. She only stared at him a moment longer before she burst into a run, up toward the hill, where the first rays of sunshine began to peek through. The following afternoon, the champions stood gathered around Brello, who lectured them on different weapons and other nonsense she'd learned years ago and didn't need to hear again. She was just contemplating whether she could sleep while standing up when, from the corner of her eye, a sudden movement by the balcony doors caught her attention. Selena turned just in time to see one of the larger champions, one of the discharged soldiers, shove a nearby guard, knocking him to the ground. The guard's head hit the marble with a crack, and he was instantly unconscious. She didn't dare to move. None of the champions did. As the man hurtled toward the door, toward the gardens and escape. But Kael and his men moved so fast that the fleeting champion didn't have time to touch the glass door before an arrow went clean through his throat. Silence fell, and half of the guards encircled the champions, hands on their swords, while the others, Kael included, rushed to the dead champion and fallen guard. Bows groaned as the archers on the mezzanine pulled their strings taut. Selena kept still, as did Nox, who was standing close beside her. One wrong movement and a spooked guard could kill her.
Even Cain didn't breathe too deeply. Through the wall of champions, guards, and their weapons, Selena beheld Kaol kneeling by the unconscious guard. No one touched the fallen champion, who lay face down, his hand still outstretched toward the glass door. Sven had been his name, though she didn't know why he'd been expelled from the army.
"Gods above,"
Nox breathed, so softly that his lips barely moved.
"They just killed him."
She thought about telling him to shut up, but even snapping at him seemed risky. Some of the other champions were murmuring to each other, but no one dared to take a step.
"I knew they were serious about not letting us leave, but..."
Nox swore, and she felt him glance sidelong at her.
"I was granted immunity by my sponsor. He tracked me down and said I wouldn't go to prison if I lost the competition."
At that point, she knew he was speaking more to himself, and when she didn't respond, Nox stopped talking.
She stared and stared at the dead champion.
What had made Sven risk it? And why here, right now? There were still 3 days until their second test. What had made this moment so special? The day she snapped at Andovir, she hadn't been thinking about freedom. No, she'd picked the time and place and started swinging. She'd never meant to escape. The sunlight shone through the doors, illuminating the champion's splattered blood like stained glass. Maybe he'd realized he had no chance of winning, and that this kind of death was far better than returning to whatever place he'd come from. If he'd wanted to escape, he would have waited until dark, when he was away from everyone at the competition. Sven had wanted to prove a point, she understood, and understood only because of that day she had come within a fingertip of touching the wall at Andovir. Otterlin could take their freedom. It could destroy their lives and beat and break and whip them. It could force them into ridiculous contests. But criminal or not, they were still human. Dying, rather than playing in the king's game, was the only choice left to him. Still staring at his outstretched hand, forever pointing toward an unreachable horizon, Selena said a silent prayer for the dead champion and wished him well. Chapter 17. With heavy eyelids, Dorian Havilliard tried not to slouch as he sat upon his throne. Music and chatter flitted through the air, wooing him to sleep. Why must his mother insist on his attending court? Even the weekly afternoon visit was too much. But it was better than studying the corpse of the Eye-Eater, which Kaol had spent the past few days investigating. He'd worry about that later, if it became an issue. Which it wouldn't, if Kaol was looking into it. It had probably just been a drunken brawl. And then there was the champion who'd tried to escape this afternoon. Dorian shuddered at the thought of what it must have been like to witness it, and at the mess Kaol had to deal with, from the injured soldier to the sponsor who'd lost his champion, to the dead man himself. What had his father been thinking when he decided to host this contest? Dorian glanced at his mother, seated on a throne beside his own. She certainly didn't know anything about it, and probably would have been horrified if she knew what kind of criminals were living under her roof. His mother was still beautiful, though her face was a bit wrinkled and cracked with powder, and her auburn hair had a few silver streaks. Today she was swathed in yards of forest green velvet and floating scarves and shawls of gold, and her crown upheld a sparkling veil that gave Dorian the distinct impression she was wearing a tent upon her head. Before them, the nobility strutted across the floor of the court, gossiping, scheming, seducing. An orchestra played minuets in a corner, and servants slipped through the gathered nobles in a dance of their own as they refilled and cleared plates and cups and silverware. Dorian felt like an ornament. Of course, he was wearing an outfit of his mother's choosing, sent to him this morning. A vest of dark bluish-green velvet, with almost ridiculously billowy white sleeves bursting from the blue and white striped shoulders. The pants, mercifully, were light gray, though his chestnut suede boots looked too new for masculine pride.
"Dorian, my dear, you're sulking."
He gave Queen Georgina an apologetic grin.
"I received a letter from Hollin. He sends his love."
"Did he say anything of interest?"
"Only that he loathes the school and wishes to come home."
"He says that every letter."
the Queen of Otterland sighed.
If your father didn't prevent me, I'd have him home.
He's better off at school. When it came to Holland, the farther away he was, the better. Georgina surveyed her son.
You were better behaved. You never disobeyed your tutors. Oh, my poor Holland. When I am dead, you'll care for him, won't you?
Dead? Mother, you're only...
I know how old I am.
She waved a ring-encrusted hand.
Which is why you must marry, and soon.
Marry? Dorian ground his teeth. Marry whom?
Dorian, you are the crown prince, and already 19 at that. Do you wish to become king and die without an heir so Holland can take the throne?
He didn't answer.
I thought so.
After a moment, she said,
There are plenty of young women who might make a good wife. Though a princess would be preferred.
There are no princesses left, he said a bit sharply.
Except for the Princess Nehemia.
She laughed and put a hand on his.
Oh, don't worry. I wouldn't force you to marry her. I'm surprised your father allows for her to still bear the title.
The impetuous, haughty girl. Do you know she refused to wear the dress I sent her? I'm sure the princess has her reasons, Dorian said warily, disgusted by his mother's unspoken prejudice. I've only spoken to her once, but she seemed lively.
Then perhaps you shall marry her.
His mother laughed again before he could respond. Dorian smiled weakly. He still couldn't figure out why his father had granted the King of Ilway's request that his daughter visit their court to become better acquainted with the ways of Otterlin. As far as ambassadors went, Nehemia wasn't exactly the best choice. Not when he'd heard rumors of her support of the Ilway rebels and her efforts to shut down the labor camp at Calicalla.
Dorian couldn't blame her for that, though.
Not after he'd seen the horror that was in Dovir and the destruction it had wrought upon Selena Sardothian's body. But his father never did anything without a reason, and from the few words he'd exchanged with Nehemia, he couldn't help but wonder if she had her own motivations in coming here, too.
It's a pity that Lady Caltaine has an agreement with Duke Parrington, his mother went on. She's such a beautiful girl, and so polite. Perhaps she has a sister.
Dorian crossed his arms, swallowing his repulsion. Caltaine stood at the far end of the court, and he was all too aware of her eyes creeping over every inch of him. He shifted in his seat, his tailbone aching from sitting for so long.
What about Elise? The queen said,
indicating a blonde young woman clad in lavender.
She's very beautiful, and can be quite playful.
As I've already learned. Elise bores me, he said.
Oh, Dorian.
She put a hand over her heart.
You're not about to inform me that you wish to marry for love, are you? Love does not guarantee a successful marriage.
He was bored. Bored of these women, bored of these cavaliers who masqueraded as companions, bored of everything. He'd hoped his journey to Endovir would quell that boredom, and that he'd be glad to return home. But he found home to be the same. The same ladies still looked at him with pleading eyes, the same serving girls still winked at him, the same councilmen still slipped pieces of potential legislation under his door with hopeful notes. And his father... His father would always be preoccupied with conquest, and wouldn't stop until every continent bore Otterland's flag. Even gambling over the so-called champions had become achingly dull. It was clear Cain and Selena would ultimately face each other, and until then, well, the other champions weren't worth his time.
You're sulking again. Are you upset over something, my pet? Have you heard from Rosamond? Oh, my poor child, how she broke your heart.
The queen shook her head.
Though it was over a year ago.
He didn't reply. He didn't want to think about Rosamond, or about the boorish husband she'd left him for. Some nobles started dancing, weaving in and out among each other. Many were his age, but he somehow felt as if there existed a vast difference between them. He didn't feel older, nor did he feel any wiser, but rather he felt...
He felt as if there were something inside him that didn't fit in with their merriment, with their willing ignorance of the world outside the castle. It went beyond his title. He had enjoyed their company early in his adolescence, but it had become apparent that he'd always be a step away. The worst of it was that they didn't seem to notice he was different, or that he felt different. Were it not for Kaol, he would have felt immensely lonely.
"Well," his mother said, snapping her ivory fingers at one of her ladies-in-waiting, "I'm sure your father has you busy, but when you find a moment to bother thinking of me and the fate of your kingdom, look through this."
His mother's lady curtsied as she extended to him a folded piece of paper, stamped with his mother's blood-red seal. Dorian ripped it open, and his stomach twisted at the long line of names. All ladies of noble blood, all of marriageable age.
"What is this?" he demanded, fighting the urge to rip up the paper.
She gave him a winning smile.
"A list of potential brides. Any one of them would be suitable to take the crown. And all, I've been told, are quite capable of producing heirs."
Dorian stuffed the list of names into the pocket of his vest. The restlessness within him would not cease.
"I'll think about it," he said,
and before she could reply, he stepped from the awning-covered podium. Immediately, 5 young women flocked to him and began asking him to dance, how he fared, if he would attend the Samhuin ball. Around and around their words circled, and Dorian stared at them blankly. What were their names? He peered over their jewel-encrusted heads to find the path to the door. He'd suffocate if he remained here for too long. With only polite goodbyes, the crown prince strode from the jangle and jingle of the court, the list of would-be brides burning a hole through his clothes and straight into his skin. Dorian put his hands in his pockets as he strode down the halls of the castle. The kennels were empty, the dogs were at the track. He'd wished to inspect one of the pregnant hounds, though he knew it was impossible to predict the outcome of the litter until she gave birth. He hoped the pups would be pure, but their mother had a tendency to escape from her pen. She was his fastest, but he'd never been able to quell the wildness within her. He didn't really know where he was going now. He just needed to walk. Anywhere. Dorian loosened the top button on his vest. The clash of swords echoed from an open doorway, and he paused. He faced the champion's training room, and even though training was supposed to be over by now, there she was. Her golden hair shone as she wove in and out of a knot of 3 guards, her sword little more than a steel extension of her hand. She didn't balk at the guards as she dodged and twirled around them. Someone began clapping to the left, and the 4 dueling figures stopped, panting. Dorian watched a grin spread across the assassin's face as she beheld the source. The sheen of sweat illuminated her high cheekbones, and her blue eyes sparkled. Yes, she was truly lovely, but... Princess Nehemia approached, clapping. She was clad not in her usual white gown, but rather in a dark tunic and loose trousers, and she clutched an ornately carved wooden staff in one hand. The princess clasped the assassin on the shoulder and said something to the girl that made her laugh. Dorian looked around. Where was Kaol or Brullo? Why was Otterlin's assassin here with the princess of Ilway, and with a sword? This could not go on, especially after that champion's attempted escape the other day. Dorian approached and smiled at the princess as he bowed. Nehemia only deigned to give him a terse nod, not surprising. Dorian took Selena's hand. It smelled of metal and sweat, but he kissed it anyway, raising his eyes to her face as he did so. "Lady Lillian," he muttered onto her skin.
"Your Highness," she said,
trying to pull her hand from his, but Dorian held fast to her calloused palm. "Might I have a word?" he said, leading her away before she could agree. When they were out of hearing distance, he demanded, "Where's Kaol?" She crossed her arms.
"Is this any way to speak to your beloved champion?"
He frowned. "Where is he?"
"I don't know. If I were to bet, though, I'd wager that he's inspecting the Eye-Eater's mangled corpse or disposing of Sven's body. Besides, Brullo said I could stay here as long as I liked after we were done. I do have another test tomorrow, you know."
Of course he knew.
Why is Princess Nehemia here?
She called on me, and when Philippa told her I was here, she insisted on joining. Apparently, a woman can only go so long without a sword between her hands.